Welcome to The Story Tinker, a place for in-depth analysis of stories, including Midnight Poppyland, Purple Hyacinth, and more. Co-hosted by sharp, witty, and dare I say, thirsty fans, we dive deep into every episode, analyzing character, relationship development, and plot theories. You can follow The Story Tinker on all podcast platforms and videos of most episodes on YouTube. You can also follow The Story Tinker on Instagram and Facebook. If you'd like weekly bonus content, sneak peeks, and more, you can support The Story Tinker on Patreon. Thanks for listening to The Story Tinker, and let's get started. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 80 of the Purple Hyacinth podcast. And today we have Leslie and Corinne with us. So why don't you ladies introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Corinne. I'm from Alexandria, Virginia. I run a coffee shop, but I am studying to get my master's in publishing. I have two big old fluffy sheepdogs that may jump up here. And I fell in love with Purple Hyacinth, I would say like 2 months ago I started reading it. It's very different from everything I've read on Webtoons with the mystery. And I love Agatha Christie, and it kind of reminded me of that Victorian Agatha Christie kind of style. So here I am.
And I'm Leslie. I am a new-ish comer to the Webtoon scene. Started out reading Midnight Poppyland and then found Purple Hyacinth over the summer. And similarly, really wound up just enjoying the sort of gritty visual aesthetic, the gritty story, you know, as much as I hate to admit it, I just really do love the they hate each other, but you ship them anyway dynamic. So that did, you know, get me within about the first two episodes. In real life, I am a musician, so obviously that's going great right now. And I while away the time reading angsty webtoons.
Yes, yeah, I think for many of us, webtoons has been a refuge from the daily life. I know it was for me, for sure.
It's also nice to like get to discuss things with people and read all the comments. It is a good substitute for an audience as a musician. So I really enjoyed it. It's filled a hole.
Yeah, totally. This is the creative outlet, and then you know you're giving of yourself to the world and your interpretation, and people are receiving it and interacting with it. Okay, so let's get into the episode. So. Just to recap of last episode, basically Lauren goes into the station and everyone stares at her because they are suspicious of her. And, you know, like, did she kill Tim Saki? Saki, is that how you pronounce his name? No, Saki.
Is it? I said Saki.
I'm thinking Saki, but I think somebody mentioned once that, I think Sophism wrote it out like so that it rhymed with, she kind of did it a rhyme with mistake. So
I think let's call it Sake.
Yeah. So the whole station is suspicious of her. Lauren goes into the locker room and she has this really interesting conversation with Kieran. I love that, but that's going to be for the when we discuss that episode. And Kieran, we leave off with Kieran saying, what are you going to tell them? And she says, the truth. And that's how we leave off last episode. So you're like, Lauren, are you going to tell them the truth?
That's not a great idea.
Hi guys, I am Loon, and by the way, I've been
like yeah, I was at the circus. What?
So, by the way, this is my personal policy in life: is always tell the truth. Not just for like a moral thing, but also because like, well, honestly, 99.9999% because of the moral thing, but also because your life is much less complicated that way. And you know, when you tell the truth, you don't have to remember alternate versions. You're just like, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. So I get, and you know what they always say, that the best lie is the lie that's closest to the truth. So it's probably what Lauren is going with here. So what happens next? We see what she's actually telling them. She's in the interrogation room, which is kind of interesting that she's now on the other side of the chair, because previously she was the one doing the interrogation before she got demoted. So it's irony, right? She got herself mixed up into all sorts of shady business, and now she's in the sus spot.
Yeah.
I like how they do the recap at the beginning of a lot of the episodes now. Like just the two panel recaps, you're like, oh yeah, that's what happened. Because a lot of the webtoons go back and like have to read a couple episodes to remember what was happening. But this, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, she was gonna tell them the truth. Perfect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So she's saying, well, kind of, right? Right. Well, kind of is actually, I think it's actually, well, kind of, it sounds like it's, she's still talking to Kieran, but it's probably meant to be for both.
Yeah. Well, once again, it's, I think Black, it's, pro- I she's it's probably her like mental dialogue. Yeah.
Yeah. I think under the Black speech bubbles, I think thought, like their thoughts, I think.
Yeah. Since, you know, mildly inconvenient to come fully clean.
Yeah,
he's telling the truth, nothing but the truth, but not the whole truth.
Which, by the way, is something that is used against her in her, in terms of her lie detecting abilities. She can detect when something's a lie, but she doesn't know if something's only partially true.
Exactly.
So she's using her own weakness, I guess, against the.
Ooh, good observation.
So she's in the room now, and March is interrogating her, and Herman is standing on the side looking dour as usual. And then there's the blonde policewoman. I think she did come up before. I don't remember if she has a name or what her name was, if she was named, but I think I do remember her from some previous investigations. Do you remember her?
Yeah, I think she was in where the guy got shot across the street. Remember the female got killed and then they went across the street. I think she was in that house with them, but they didn't say a name, I don't think.
Yeah.
She was in one other, because I think I remember her telling Lauren, oh, good job, when Lauren put together something about, honestly, it could be even after this, I don't remember. But anyway, she's appeared. So March is recapping, and he's like, so let's recap. You went to the circus, sorry, to the carnival at 7:20, entered the big tent at 8 o'clock, then about halfway through the show, you left around 8:30. And she's like, correct, after Hestia's number. And she's like, he says you were alone the whole time, you didn't speak to anyone. And she confirms that. She says, I only spoke to the fortune teller, which again, this is very smart of her because she's preemptively striking. Like if she would leave that out and they would find it out later, that would cast suspicion on her and make her look.
Right. She's immediately offering up details. She's like, look, I'm cooperating. This is somebody who can corroborate my story, who has no vested interest. You know, it's not like my buddy is telling me, oh yeah, I was there. So this random stranger can prove.
Yep.
And she's like, yes, the doorman, when I left the tent, they can both confirm that I was alone. And, you know, this is something that they deliberately decided to do. Like when she left when they saw Tim's sake and they decided to leave the tent, she said, let's leave separately. Although they were sitting together and they were at times, like when they waltzed in, they were holding hands, promenading, yeah, like a couple. So I'm like, a little nervous about that.
Mm-hmm. I suspect that unless the doorman was supposed to watch for them, that he probably wouldn't have noticed everybody going into the tent because it's just a mass of people, but somebody coming out in the middle of the show would have been very noticeable.
Well, so, I think she made sure to talk to the doorman. Like she was already kind of like, if I get caught, like I'm going to talk to this guy so he'll remember me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's foresightful. And Herman is skeptical and he's like, and you left because you saw a stake in the tent. And she says,
yeah, well, anything ever?
Who's this guy?
Maybe we can make this a bonus question, a discussion of what our feelings about Herman are, because I don't think I think of him as other people think of him. So you know what? Maybe let's do a bonus question.
Ooh, okay.
Okay. So she says, yes, I noticed him. And her response is pretty antagonistic. Like her fists are clenched. She's narrowing her eyes. Like she clearly doesn't even respond to him in a way, in a neutral way. She's antagonistic towards him. She says, yes, I noticed him mid-show walking up to the back seat. And I knew I had to leave because of my restraining order. And Herman's like, you expect us to believe that? Are you sure you didn't accidentally scratch him with a little golden viper venom on the way out?
And they're both like, like Lauren threw off a shot with, I had to leave because of my restraining order, you jerk. And you know, he comes right back. He's like, oh, both of you are being toddlers. Please stop.
Yes, he's, in terms of his like neutral position as a detective, he's not
doing great.
He has been suspicious of Lauren for a while and he just feels like there's just evidence piling up and he just does not believe that Lauren is shade free, which is just justifiable. You know, she is not.
He just doesn't understand the reason behind it. It's that classic, like by the book detective figures out that something is wrong, something is up, and becomes a de facto antagonist by trying to be the good guy by the books, because he doesn't recognize that this is somebody who is operating outside of the bounds of the law with a very, very strong, principled, and ultimately like for the common good purpose.
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of what I was gonna say, but about in our my analysis of Herman, but yeah, he does not tolerate things going outside of the box. Huh. And honestly, I wonder if there's a part of him that thinks that she gets special treatment because either because of her brains, which, you know, people do value people who are smart and, you know, as an asset to the department, and also because of her uncle, you know.
Right.
And actually, there's a statement that he says later, which I'll point out when we get to it, that I think is another reason why he would be resentful.
And anyways, I mean, in his shoes, I think that's a really fair assessment.
I think there's a little bias, though, because he wanted that job. He wanted that chief job.
Yeah.
Fair.
So his first Harvey, less than a month ago, and now Stake. Although I will say there's no reason to think that Lauren had anything against Harvey. Harvey was just a random person. Like, it wasn't like she had a history with Harvey. But he says, people drop like flies around you, Sinclair. Which, again, I don't think is a fair statement, because they literally, Harvey was like anybody, or I guess technically the three who, maybe if you want to say the three who were in the office that early in the morning. But yeah, I guess the second one, it really is only her.
Like, oh, one more and we have officially got a pattern. Not great.
And now this thing that he said to her, it really triggers her, because she's thinking again, there's like this image of murderer, 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 murderer. And she just, it's reverberating in her head. And she's thinking back to all the people that Kieran killed in the tower. And really, I mean, she has questioned herself before, but she's questioning it again now. Like, is what I am doing and the person that I'm collaborating with, the murderer, the assassin, is it justified? And am I actually doing more good than harm by collaborating with him? Or am I fooling myself? Because I hope she's introspective enough to know that her motives might be clouding her judgment. Am I fooling myself and thinking that my collaboration is going to come up with good, but actually maybe it isn't? Mm-hmm. So he's touching on, like,
is the cost there along the way going to put her on the other side of a moral divide that, you know, where the ends don't ultimately justify the means?
Mm-hmm. All right. I know. I mean, when I read like stuff about World War II and negotiations that were made with the Nazis, I mean, it's like you're making a deal with the devil, and I get it, but it's like, it's so hard. You don't know if you're doing good or not bad. Like, it's just, it's impossible.
Yeah. I mean, isn't there in the earlier episodes, I can't remember which episode, she's like telling herself, like, you need to let this go. Like, it's been too long, like, let it go, let it go. But like, yeah, she just can't, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think she was on the verge of letting it go and then thought back, you know, had that recollection of she had known and other people had known. And that sort of put it right back on the front burner for her when she was this close to letting it go.
When do you think she was close to letting it go?
I think she might have been, but then she saw Sake again. And then she saw the, what's his name, whatever. He had that picture that had Sake in the car, and I think she was right back in it.
Yep.
I don't think she ever let it go.
I don't think she let it go, but I think she was getting to the point where she was seriously considering, like, it's been 10 years, is it time? Not that she had, like, right, crossed over to this needs to go in the box now, but it was starting to, the scales were starting to tip a little bit in that direction, and then she saw Sake and it was like, oh, well, never mind, scrap that idea.
Right back into it. Yeah. So anyway, she's thinking back to it. And then March, you know, is defending her. And he says, there's been a Phantom Scythe assassin using the same modus operandi for years. And almost a decade of cold cases. Lauren was only a teenager when they started. So he doesn't think that she would have been able to do it. And poor Lauren is thinking to herself, she's like, oh, sweet irony. I know precisely who the killer is for all of these. And I have to keep my mouth shut. Mm-hmm. Because she knows it's Belladonna. And again, this is like, are you doing more good than harm? And like, even, you know, if you turn her in, first of all, what would happen? Let's speculate. What do you think would happen if she would turn her in terms of, not in terms of what would happen to Lauren and like, how do you know this information, but in terms of what would happen in terms of Belladonna. Maybe I should save this for the bonus question. Meaning, like, would they be able to get her?
I think it's totally fair right now. I mean, to me, I think that one, Belladonna probably has some like fail-safe, some plan that is triggered in the event that some informant finds out about her and goes to the police. That just seems like smart assassin. You have that in your back pocket. And Lauren saying it was Belladonna Davenport would trigger whatever that like plan is that's sitting in the back of Belladonna's closet. But then I think ultimately what would happen is, even if they like got her and brought her in for questioning and anything came out of it, that then Lauren would kind of wind up falling on her sword. Because she'd have to admit where she'd gotten the information and her involvement there. And again, it's like, you have to tell the lie that's closest to the truth, but just tell the truth because your life is simpler. If she tried to lie to kind of align the stories to point out that she'd gotten the information in an okay way, it would be less strong. And Belladonna would probably go free, probably also knowing who Loon was because of who informed on her. Or Lauren would tell the truth and get herself in a massive amount of trouble, and Belladonna, like 50-50 chance, would go free anyway.
I feel like Belladonna would just kill anybody who tried to apprehend her.
Or that. Also, strong choice, strong possibility.
Yeah. That they'd be like, well, we know it probably wasn't Lauren.
Well, and I think, isn't the circus like bankrolled by someone really rich anyway? So I'm sure they all have alibis and backstories and like build up.
Even if you turned her in,
like they'd be like, no.
Yeah. I mean, Kieran said that that's their specialty, but and yeah. So this isn't convincing enough for Herman, because he says nothing prevents her from copycatting and making it look like it's someone else's job, which actually is pretty astute of him, I think.
Yeah, she has access to all the case files. She has access to stuff that's not publicly disclosed.
Yeah, he's a detective. In that sense, he's good. He says golden, now this line I think indicates something. He says golden viper venom might be expensive, but it's nothing your family can't afford. And I think that this harkens to resentment, class resentment on his part. And we don't have any indication that he's, let's say, you know, poor or middle class, but clearly there is class resentment in their society, which is a feature of this cartoon. And even Herman on the side of the law, who's not a Phantom Scythe member and has never, you know, talked about any social justice-y kind of things, he is resentful of her class.
Yeah, and especially if he has aspirations within that department and he has this thorny, problematic detective who he can't fire because of who her family is, but whose sort of consistently problematic record keeps him from advancing in the way that he wants, or even just like doing his job in the way that he wants, if we make him less like ambitious, that would breed a lot of resentment in the course of a year or 2 years. So there's definitely like another conversation happening beneath this interrogation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very true. And March, I like how March is able to, even though, you know, Herman is his superior, he says, Herman, back down, right? We can't jump to conclusions without even a shadow of tangible evidence. So March has got a backbone.
Yes. Like, cookies for March.
Well, I really like him. He also called Lauren to warn her. Such mm-hmm. a good guy. And then, of course, we had some people discussing, like, you know, because people like to suspect everybody, like, what if March is the bad guy? I'm like, no!
I see that, but I'm also a little bit more worried. Like, I feel like with these shows, with not just Purple Hyacinth, but with comics like it and shows like it, is once you get a sort of secondary character being like really awesome, upstanding person three times, they're gonna die.
Yeah, that is another definite worry.
like, oh no, oh no, no, he's gonna do like one more good deed, and then in six episodes he's gonna wind up like a murder victim, and I don't want that to happen because he's good people.
That's why they make the good ones die, so that we're sad.
Either gonna be another mole, or he's going to get like kidnapped and die horribly, or Kieran's gonna have to kill him.
Maybe he's gonna be the hero and he'll be surviving and he'll help the characters and he'll be there with them as the end of the cartoon winds down and everyone gets their happy resolution.
We will speak that into existence and hold on to our collective delusion as long as we possibly can.
Okay, fine. Okay. So he tells him, until then, she's not a murderer, which is nice. Thank you, March. So Herman, again, with his like derisive look, he says, I put you on leave, but I want you in the precinct where I can see you. I want someone from the department to accompany you wherever you go from now on. And he bangs that table and will inform Chief Sinclair to keep an eye on you as well. Which actually I wonder now if that's like a power play on his part where he's like, I'm not the boss, but I'm gonna boss him around.
I mean, he does have Chief Sinclair in a little bit of a headlock there, because even if you're the chief of police, there are people who are the boss of you. And if he is saying, like, I will inform Chief Sinclair to keep an eye on you as well, he's saying, look, your relative is a problem. And she is a public relations problem. And she is an administrative and an institutional problem. She's gumming up the works within us. You know, confidence in the police is at an all-time low. And she's making us look worse. So you better keep an eye on her, or somebody's going to get the axe. And usually the person at the top gets the axe for a public relations disaster. And that's you.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, that was actually something I never understood as a kid, where like the head of a department or institution or a CEO, they would always get they would always basically take the responsibility, even if it was something they had nothing to do with, like if it was an underling or something. Mm-hmm. But I mean, now I get it, because like they're that leader and they're supposed to be, you know, knowing everything, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, anyway, totally, that happened. So we are done with this interrogation. And yeah. Lauren has a stalker now. Lauren's gonna have a hard time doing her escapades because someone's supposed to be following her all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes her job more difficult. Her job more difficult. So now we are in the, it looks like we're in the archive room. And mm-hmm. Kieran is there, and Kieran is curious. He is opening up transcript for Chow's case, Detective Lauren Sinclair and witness Tim Sake. And I love that he is looking into this, because to me, it means that he is curious about Lauren and wants to know what is driving her, what happened with Tim Sake. He kind of realizes she's not telling him everything and he wants to know. And he's not stupid. So he's like, oh, I'm in the perfect spot for this. So here we see, Sake says, but I'm not, I would never kill him. He was my friend. I have no connection to the Phantom Scythe. And he knows, Kieran knows that Lauren can detect lies. So he can understand from her responses when she's detecting a lie. Because she says, of course not, it's terrifying, isn't it? Insidious, they strike so suddenly, nobody is safe. And then Sake says, yes, ever since the Allendale train tragedy, nobody could have known they would strike there. What a horrible, senseless massacre. And then Sinclair goes off the rail. She says, what did you say? I said, stop, I think, lying bastard. And he recognizes that she has heard a lie, because he knows. And in typical Lauren reaction, she's flown off her handle without thinking and just given into her rage.
Yep.
That's, you know, where it's pretty easy to spot like Kieran's, you know, issues, but Lauren's issues took me a while longer to understand. But once mm-hmm. I did, I was like, oh my God, like they're pretty big too.
Yeah, it's always, I think there's also always that delay catching the actual character flaws of the main character, because you're inside their head rationalizing their life choices right along with them. And you don't realize that you are also rationalizing their poor choices.
100%.
Until you realize that, like, Lauren, you could, like, anger management, you can be angry, you have good reason to be angry, but you can, you go from 0 to 80 real fast, hon.
She's shooting herself in the foot.
If she, really are.
Think about it. You're lying. You're like, you know, these people are lying. Like, that would, I feel like I'd go from 0 to 80. Like, it's yes. just stop. Of course, yeah. I'm just analyzing for Lauren again.
Well, no, but like, it's totally true. But then there's also like, Lauren could take that power. Like, I have this like perfect vision in my head of her figuring out how to reverse engineer confessions out of those lies by asking exactly the right questions, but she doesn't do it because she just gets so mad.
Like, right, she could have gotten so much more information out of him if she hadn't flown off her handle. And now she wasn't questioning him anymore, and that was it. She got nothing else out. If she would have been smart, she could have done what you said, asked more pointed questions and gotten information, or at least known what was false, even if she wouldn't have gotten the positives.
Yeah. It's like a game of like hot, cold, and she can tell, so she can steer it, you know, be like, oh, that was a lie. So let me like push that pressure point mm-hmm. a little bit. Okay, now we have the next bit of truth. She could be great at reverse engineering real actual confessions, but she gets mad.
I think about when she and Kieran were interrogating and Kieran was asking the questions and she was behind, like, she kept herself in check then, so maybe they just do it.
Yeah, she wasn't emotional.
Yeah,
the second, that, one the second where, that she saw that picture, for example, she just shoved it in his face and revealed her identity, etc. Like, when it wasn't something she cared too much about, she was better. But anyway, so Kieran realizes that this is the trigger. He says, Allendale train tragedy, huh? And he thinks back to the moments where she kind of indicated, you know, her passion and the reason that she, her motives that she was interested in working with him. She, you know, when they first met, and he says, one of the early encounters, when she says, before I was transferred to the patrol unit, I was a detective. I worked on a case a year ago, which got me kicked off the investigation unit. And Kieran, you know, even then he's like, that's it. That's bullcrap. That's not enough to make someone like you lose it like that. And there was something more to it. And he sees her resentful expression. So he knows he hit gold back then, wasn't there. And then another memory back in episode 43 in the cave, after he killed everybody, including Anslow, he says, that's not what this is about, is it? You aren't mad because I killed those people. You're mad because I killed Anslow. What's your connection with him? And he sees, Anslow. And then here he flashes back to Lauren when she, you know, shoves that picture in Anslow's face. I'm like, what's your connection with him? How do you know him? Which again is not the best way to get answers out of people, but whatever. So
he saw something else in that picture that we're not seeing, because it's obviously Tim's sake in the truck, but would it make her flip out that much?
Yeah, because it's related to her parents' death.
Yeah, but then like Tim's sake shows up and it's like, but I just feel like, am I missing, every time I see that picture I'm like, am I missing something in this picture?
I think we probably all are. I think it's going to be one of those, for some reason, when I see it, I keep like, my eyes keep going to the license plate. And it's one of those things where I'm like, I don't have the information, like the information to understand this has not been presented in the comic yet. So I can't put it together, but something about the framing about it, like keeps drawing my eye there. So whether it's that or something else, I have a suspicion that there is a mundane detail somewhere in that photo that we'll get more information on in 10 or 20 episodes, who knows, that is the flashpoint. Because, you know, it's like if your mom had like a certain model of perfume and it always had this like wonky label and you saw it in like the bottom corner of some random selfie on Instagram, like you'd have a reaction to it, even if it doesn't pop out of the picture itself, because it's not the point of the picture. So I bet there's something like that in there for Lauren. Or we're fully off in red herring land, either one.
I was wondering about the license plate. I definitely looked at that number. So because it's there, it's not blurred out or anything, you know, so maybe there's some significance. So anyway, so Kieran has realized that, you know, Lauren, there's something about that, the Allendale train tragedy, that is important to Lauren. And he says, what did you see in that picture, Lauren? So he's on the case. And by the way, this for me is my personal biggest issue that bothers me, that Lauren does not communicate with Kieran. And, you know, I get that she's always been that way and she doesn't communicate with anybody, but I'm like, you have next to you the person who A, has the same exact motivation as you, B, probably can give you so much information if you would only talk to him. And there's so much, she's putting herself in so much danger by not communicating with him. And he could probably help her so much. And I am going crazy. Right. Of course, it would make the story a lot shorter, but whatever.
It would. Like, we wouldn't have the angst. And, you know, a perfect main character is a really boring main character. But it is really interesting because the really difficult balances that Lauren is having to walk right now are, of course, what Kieran had to learn how to do several years ago when he started working for the Phantom Scythe. That, like, you have to keep, like, some part of your life completely separate. You have to know to say exactly the right things. You have to put your personal feelings aside. You have to understand, like, what you are doing to maintain your image that allows you to pursue this longer term goal that has to be buried, like, so deeply that no one sees it. And of course, people with quick tempers are gonna have some trouble with that dichotomy. And like exactly what you said, like, please just talk to Kieran. He will tell you how to do this. He knows how to do this thing. He had to swallow his pride and swallow all that anger many years ago. He still got it. He still got it in there. Mm-hmm. But like, he knows how to manage having to do two impossible, mutually exclusive things for the sake of an important goal. So just talk to him, damn it. Rant over.
I'm even thinking that just for practical details, that he would be able to help her solve the mystery.
It's like unstoppable force meets immovable object, except both of those things want to go in the same direction, but they're too busy doing this all the time. Like, your problem, you two, is the way you interact with each other.
Yep. It's like magnets, you know, it's like the opposite or the same side of a magnet because they're like pushing each other against them all the time. But yeah, you're right. We honestly, like, it does make the story compelling because we're just like gritting our teeth at them and yelling at them. And, but yeah, but it makes for a lot of drama. So now we have a couple of days pass and they're back in the office and it's very funny to see. So Kim passes by with this gigantic stack of paperwork and she sees William just, you know, his head is bent over his desk and she looks at him and she seems, you know, kind of concerned because he's just scribbling away and ignoring her and just devoted to his work. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, sigh. And she just drops the whole thing down on Lauren's desk and she's like, what's with Willem? And she calls him Willame because I think she's calling him lame.
Yeah.
Which I feel bad. Poor William. He's the straight-laced guy and Kim is just like on his case for being a nice straight-laced little boy. But you know, she's right. There is in previous episodes, like this is William's main problem. He doesn't let go and he accepts all the burden on himself. But she also says he's barely breathed a word to me the whole week, even though we went to eat together after Steak's case and everything was fine. So she's offended, especially because they had a pretty good conversation about, you know, pretty emotional topic. So she's like, and honestly, I think that's why he's not talking to her.
Yeah. He's embarrassed. It's like, oh, you saw so much of me when I was vulnerable. And I wouldn't have, if I wasn't feeling so crappy, I wouldn't have told you all of those things, even though I desperately wanted somebody to hear them. Now I have to like see you at work and this is horrible.
It's so bad. Yeah, he's not ready to let someone into his life yet. And honestly, that's something that I'm really worried about. I'm worried that he is going to make a giant mistake because he's going to try to live up to his family's expectations and take all the burden onto himself and do the right thing. And I think he's going to be inadvertently doing the wrong thing, not just for himself, but for other people around him. Yeah. I'm kind of worried about a spy situation or an informer situation, but some kind of accidentally putting the right thing or his family before his friends who are maybe not doing such legal things.
Or the pressure that he's putting himself under is just gonna, like, he's gonna crack. I think your theory is probably is more likely. Secondary to that, I would put he has a little bit of a breakdown because at some point, even for, you know, most the most stoic himbo of comic land, like, will crack eventually. And he'll just be like in a ditch somewhere and maybe get exploited. Nefarious parties, but I like your idea more of him, of his like commitment to family and image and all of these things that he's been striving for a decade and has never received an ounce of recognition for being leverage used against him intentionally or unintentionally. Oh, it's gonna rip my heart out. I'm not excited.
Fine with his family, it's just real sad to me.
And then of course we like have all that context in the next four panels of
So Lauren is like shocked because she's like, you what? She's like, you hung out together? You guys never wanted to hang out without me as a middleman before, which by the way shows you she was trying to be a middleman. I think she was trying to get those two together.
Lauren, wingman, like all
good for her. And she's like, and all it needed was myself getting kidnapped. Maybe I should get myself kidnapped more often, which is a very funny sense of humor thing.
One of the things I love about this comic are the deadpan asides. Like, truly one of my favorite bits. Every time there's one, I'm just like, oh, yes. Little sarcastic, like, look into the camera. Like, I love these. Give me all of them.
Yeah, and the cartoony faces that they acquire during these moments is hilarious.
It's just...
And the nose becomes like this little, I don't know, thing, circle thing. It's cute. And Kim's like, oh, I don't get paid to deal enough to deal with this lieutenant. And Lauren's like, no, he doesn't get paid enough to deal with you.
Oh,
which is cute. You know, it's interesting because, you know, Kim is kind of like the antidote to William, if he can accept it, but he so far has not been able to accept it. You know, she's the rule breaker, the clown, he's the rigid one, the strict one. And in ways, you know, he obviously gets on her case all the time about it, but like really she's what he needs. If he would be able to accept it.
I like how he had little moments now and then, like, what did she want to eat, watermelon or something? And he was like, oh, let's go get some watermelon. Like, he has like little moments like where you can see, but like then he's just back to being himself.
It's really interesting how both of them are, it's like for both of them it's a front. We know that Kim has something is majorly messed up in her, like before panel one of Purple Hyacinth. And I think that at least, you know, maybe she's like 90% a clown, and then the like 10% that puts her over the top is her overcompensating. And I think that William is stoic, but he's like 90, he's actually 90% as stoic as he puts on, and then the other 10% is overcompensating. And it's like, both of you are so broken and sad, and I need you to both go to therapy for like 5 minutes, just five.
I mean, honestly, the reason that Will is probably so stoic is because he otherwise fears that he won't be able to control himself. You know, I mentioned this when referenced to Midnight Poppyland, but my husband grew up in a very dysfunctional home. And when I met him, and as he got started, like, would tell me about it, I would always tell him, like, oh, let's talk about it. You have to talk about it. Tell me about it. How did it feel? And he was like, I don't want to talk about it. I won't talk about it. I won't talk about it. And then 10 years later, when he, like, did talk about it, it burst out of him and he like went insane with emotion because he hadn't talked about it all the time. And the reason he didn't want to talk about it was because he didn't want to go insane. And William doesn't want to start talking about his feelings because then he's going to break down and he can't handle the influx of emotions and it'll overwhelm him. So he just doesn't deal with it.
And Kim doesn't deal with it by like always looking the other direction with humor. You know, there are the people who screw the jar lid on really tightly and they're going to hold it there. They're spending all of their time and attention and focus to hold it shut. And then there are other people who are just like, this is not a mess. If I just look this way, well, we don't ever have to acknowledge that it's a mess over there. Because, and then if she ever turns around and stares at it, then she's going to go nuts. Mm-hmm. It's like different kinds of acknowledgement and avoidance of it. The yin and yang seem kind of dysfunctional.
Awesome.
All of our broken characters.
Exactly. Oh, I love it. And now this is why I wanted to talk about this cartoon, because it has real human beings. Cartoon, sorry, not the appropriate word. graphic novel story. But now we focus in on two other people who are starting to intrigue us, because we have Lucas, or Mr. Grumpy Cat, and Lila. And, you know, Lucas is staring darkly into his coffee as usual, and Lila is pondering her coffee, but really she's thinking about something else. And she gives him a side eye glance, and she's like, so, very nervous expression, are you coming to the New Year's party on the 30th? And, you know, she is at that point, she's backlit by what looks like the Christmas tree and with ornaments and the bright, sparkly, cheery, you know, that's Lila, sweet. You know, people have said, you know, she obviously must be the leader because she's the least likely suspect to be the leader.
Oh no. I'm just holding, I am going to pull a Kim and put that in the corner of things that I pretend to not so that I don't have to deal with it. The squee over the squishy one and the grumpy one,
right? I don't think it's likely, but it's fun to say, right? Because it's the most, you know, not obvious one.
But I'm not putting anything past these two at this point. Like, if I'm raising sophism, like, nothing is impossible. Aliens, unlikely, not impossible.
fine, granted. So Lucas is like, you know, just gives her a dark look. And she's like, last year was so much fun. It would be lovely to have you with us. And he's like, yes, the joy of seeing drunk coworkers, priceless blackmail material. And then he says, and he's like, you know, staring ominously with dark joy at his cup. And he's like, if you're there, I definitely can't miss it. And now she's very confused because she's like, does that mean he likes me? Does that mean he wants to have blackmail against me? Is that still a good thing? Is it like the category of like boys teasing you means they liked you? Like what?
And I like her badump has a question mark. Like, badump?
Confused heartbeat?
Maybe.
It's like, it's one of those things where it's like, he might have meant that like completely sincerely, but he just sets such a terrible precedent with the way he says all other words that come out of his mouth that it sounds threatening. Even if he didn't mean it, he could show up with roses and chocolates and you'd just be like, confused.
I mean, even the way they drew his face when he says that, you're like, that's a little sinister looking.
We have no idea what his face actually looks like because it's always just like burned all the way out. Just like set that burn brush up to 100 and go to town.
Yep, permanent black around his eyes. And Lauren's looking at all of them and she's like, she's seeing, you know, there's like these tornado marks on top of Will and Kim's head, and there's the badumps and there's Lucas, and she's like, too many pent up feelings in this room. So now, perfect timing. I think that's March, right? His hair is blonde there, but I think it's supposed to be March. He's like, okay, Lauren, ready to go home? And she's like, yes, get me out of this room. She is ready.
Like, so the one she said, thank you, could get it with a spoon.
Yes. Got it with a spoon. It's funny. So they're walking home, and she's thinking to herself, a week already, they haven't found anything on stake yet, but I suppose I should count my luck for not having his murder pinned on. So, you know, she's frustrated that there isn't more information, but she's kind of grateful that at least they haven't said yet. Not officially, at least, except in Herman's eyes. With all this going on, I barely had time to think about my parents or Dylan, which I find very surprising because, like, she always had time to think about them.
Yeah.
Sure. And, you know, she doesn't have much time left for, you know, that meeting with Sandman that's coming up. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't, you know, it could be she's thought about it, but we haven't been privy to her thoughts about what she's thinking about that situation. So, which I'm very curious about.
She has his time because she's just stuck at her desk now doing paperwork. So why is she not, like, I wonder what's really going on in her brain that she's not thinking about her parents or Dylan. Because it's been like 10 years of her life she's been thinking about this.
And she's probably going home at a normal hour now that she's being walked home, and she isn't going out at night. It seems that from later that she hasn't gone out really with Kieran. So what else is she doing, right? So she says, oh, this is Detective Wood, it's not March. That makes sense that he was blonde. Thanks, Detective Wood. I'm sorry again that you have to do this because of me. I'll see you tomorrow. And he's like, no worries. It isn't your fault. See you. So, you know, listen, he's at least nice to her. he doesn't seem to be suspicious of her.
Yeah. Oh. That feeling of being under somebody's eye, though, I think can really put a damper on, you know, if she's feeling under scrutiny at work, even just doing mountains of paperwork.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, emotionally, that must be very tough because you're, you know, these are people who are supposed to be your colleagues and your friends. And now, like, at least a number of them suspect you, or there's like a shadow of doubt over you. And that must be emotionally very difficult. And I don't know if Lauren, you know, we don't find out, Lauren doesn't talk about it that much in terms of like how it affects her emotionally, but most normal people I think would be.
She's tired. Yeah, like very least, she's tired. Her brain's tired, her soul is tired. Does she sleep? Does she eat? Unclear, she's tired.
I do think, though, that Lauren is the kind of person who has tough skin and doesn't care as much as other people would about what other people think about her. Yeah. I think she's more resilient in that way.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, it seems like this guy would march. Like, I think Herman's really one of the only ones that are like, you did this, you're a murderer. Whereas the other people are like, oh, it's not your fault. Like,
we need to do this just to, like, check all the boxes, but
we're doing our job. Like,
yeah.
Think she's a murderer. I really wonder what her uncle thinks of all this, though, because we've never really gotten in depth what he thinks about that.
100%. I mean, I'm very, very curious about her uncle, which we could talk about as a bonus question. I have to do something for there. So anyway, so she leans back. You know, as soon as the gates slam, she kind of lets her guard down as she, you know, leans back against the wall and she goes sigh. She says, one more week. Now we do find out she is thinking about it. One more week before Sandman reaches out to me. Of all the people I would have expected to help us, he was at the bottom of the list. Can I even trust anything he said that night? Not like I have any more options. And she's just overwhelmed. And like you said, she is tired. And she, you know, she breathes out this beautiful image of, like, you know, her leaning back. There's this, you know, the breath from her air. Her breath is like crystallizing because it's so cold outside. And yeah, she's overwhelmed. She's under a lot of mental pressure. And as you know, Lauren is somebody who takes everything on her shoulders and doesn't let anyone else in. She hasn't.
Oh, look, no wonder she and William get along so well. And Kieran and Kim get along so well. Look, they're just like, they're like pairs.
Yeah. Speaking of which, she hears someone say, hey, and she says, Kieran, what are you doing here? And Kieran is also leaning against a wall, looks like he's inside the gates. And he says, I've been following you from the precinct and you didn't even notice. And he tells her something that, you know, to me shows his concern. He's like, with the number of enemies you've racked up in the Phantom Scythe, letting your guard down could get costly very quickly, because he knows that Belladonna is after Lauren and probably other people in Phantom Scythe. And he's just trying to tell her without telling her, watch your back. I wonder if I was him, the first thing when he had that encounter with Belladonna, I was actually wondering, like, if he was going to just tell her flat out, Belladonna's out to kill you, like, please be careful. What I was actually hoping for was like, Lauren, you're in danger, come live with me. But that didn't happen.
No. Thank
you. Not quite there yet.
I was really hoping.
Where? The underground tunnel where she thought he lived.
Yeah, but sadly, his level of protection has not gotten there yet. But anyway, but he is trying to warn her. And, you know, Lauren jokes, she's like, not only in the Phantom Scythe now, and she's, you know, turning obliquely and kind of looking back at the person that accompanied her to reference the police station. And Kieran's like, well, at least there isn't a bounty out on you yet. Well, wait, the king wants any of my accomplices' heads. Oh, well. And that goofy expression. Because they're both very good at joking around. And, you know, Lauren smiles. They have a macabre sense of humor. Mm-hmm. They're able to make jokes out of terrible things.
Yep. Kind of the only way to function when you're under that kind of pressure. You know, you have to laugh at the things that shouldn't be laughed at, because otherwise you don't have much.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I love this little smile. You rarely see her, unless she's with Kim, like, give her, like, a moment of, like, normalcy and smile at his sarcasm. I like that.
Yeah. Very intense, Lauren.
And, you know, she's like, were you waiting here just to remind me of all the great things happening in my life lately? And Kieran's like, no, I actually have something that might interest you. And she's like, what? And she steps towards him. And he says, I have what you need to prove Sake's guilt in Chow's case. And that's where the episode
ends. And roll credits.
Yeah. With the fantastic image at the end. I love that image. It's really cute. Especially when they alter it, depending on what happened in the episode.
That makes it spicy.
And I love to scroll. I love the let's make it spicy. And then you scroll down and there's always a creator comment.
Yes, let's see what the comment is. So the poll is, how much do you want Kiwi to happen? Level A, getting Lauren kidnapped equals dinner. Level B, getting Lauren shot is a hug. Level C, getting Lauren killed. Okay, let's stop there.
Yeah, don't kill your main character. Not great for plot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But anyway, when I first read that, where he was like, oh, I have what it takes to prove his guilt, I was like, yes, he cares about her. He did investigations or whatever he did in the last couple of days to help her out. Yes. I was so happy. I love that. Do you guys think that also?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
When we saw his image and he's looking through the file, I was like, is he just curious to know more about her? Is he going to try to help her? Like, you weren't sure. You're like, he's just being curious, but then he's like, oh no, he brought her everything she needs. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've been on the Kieran genuinely values Lauren train since basically the beginning, and then it seems like everything else is just like difficulty in execution, such as, you know, those episodes in the 40s that we all love but also all hate. And like, is there enough goodwill on the part of both of them to overcome the crater that those episodes put into their trust? But I feel like I've always seen like Kieran really cares about her and is just doing that thing where he has to like separate out the parts of himself and his wants from his mission, because if he gives in too much to any one of them, you know, the other things collapse, and he has to be extremely careful about how much information he gives to Lauren, especially knowing that she's really hot-headed and tends to abuse that information without meaning to, which could give him away and give away the fact that he's a double agent and expose her and expose other people. So it's really interesting watching him trying to walk this impossibly fine line of also what I suspect are growing feelings for her, that he's just not, you know, the light bulb hasn't gone off in the back of his head yet, where he becomes aware of those feelings, but they're there.
So that's what I want to ask. I want to ask that as a bonus question. So should we stop this and go to the bonus questions?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to stop the recording. Thank you so much to my current patrons, Susie, Lady Libras, Mary, Alley Cat, Chelsea, Lily, Jenny, Haley, One and Only Taco, Elizabeth, Maria, Molly, Veronica, Emily, and also Emily. Your support is truly, truly, truly appreciated. Thank you so, so much.